Hello, this is Tom Campbell. Today is September 29th, 2013, and today we are talking with Mike Jan, Tony Andreessen, and Larry LaPole. And today our topic is Metro Beat Records, a local record company from the 1960s into the early 1970s. Gentlemen, if you don't mind, could you please tell us your full name, date of birth, and hometown, please?
Michael Lawrence Jan, August 11th, 1939, Minneapolis, Minnesota, for birthplace.
Tony Andreessen, born January 28th, 1943, and I'm from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Larry LaPole, August 25th, 1934. From Minneapolis, Minnesota.
So when does Metro Beat Records get started, and what is the origin of the label, Mike?
David Anthony Wachter has a booking agency, David Anthony Productions. I've been spending some time in his office with him talking about the business. He gets drafted in the Army, goes to Korea, Surf and Bird happens. He comes back, gets his booking agency back up and running full speed, and says, are you interested? You've said that you're interested in records, putting records out, a record company, as opposed to booking or promoting groups, whatever. He has bands wanting to record or have recorded and would like records out to boost their name value, airplay, and get them a better price at dances at their jobs. So along comes the Cornerstones, jumping right into the first one, a phone call to David, a group from North Dakota, thinking of the town right now, but Grand Forks, North Dakota, a band that has a following up there, doing pretty well, comes to town here to Universal Audio to record You Rule Me and Our Love Is All Through. Both of those were written by somebody in the band. I believe it was a four-piece band. They have a master tape. David, in talking with them, probably about booking whatnot, I'm not sure that he actually does book them because of their following up in North Dakota. We come to terms that we'll put the record out, and that puts us in the business. We don't have a label for it. We brainstorm for a name. Metro Beat comes up from a friend of David's, just in passing out of nowhere. And we said, oh, that's it. We wanted something that sounded like the big city, but a pop name that would be catchy. So Metro Beat, we need a label design. I go to Larry at the Star Tribune, at his drawing board, and say, I'm thinking of doing something with a drummer beat where you can capitalize on the hole on the center of the 45 record. Let's pretend that's the drum head, the bass drum, and we got a guy on each side of that banging on it like a marching band would with a large drum. Mm. And he puts it pen and ink and comes up with something, and we have a label ready to go over to K-Bank, I believe, that pressed that record. They took it back North Dakota. It went to number one in Grand Forks and farther west, some of the bigger cities, a lot of airplay for their immediate area. We couldn't do much of anything here in Minnesota. Down here, they were known back there. That's where it happened. And it happened well for them. They hit charts, top of their charts up there.
Okay, and the next 45 happens to be the last 45 put out by the Trashmen. Green, Green Backs, Back Home, backed with Address Enclosed. Larry and Tony, can you just briefly give us a run-through on that 45?
Green Greenbacks Back Home was just a parody that we wanted to do. Mike, I think, wanted to do that song. Addressed and Closed was a song that Larry had written, and country artists were doing duets back then with a guy and a gal. and it was a perfect song for that, so we did that.
Larry, had you written that song earlier or in 67? Address Enclosed.
When did I write it?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Okay. Earlier. Definitely earlier.
Mm-hmm. Prior to 67.
Yeah.
Any success on radio play with the final Trashman 45?
Oh, yeah. We played it. They played it on the Ralph Emery show in Nashville when we went there. We just walked into the studio and spent a night with Ralph Emery and Marty Tex, Robbins came in.
Tex Ritter.
Tex Ritter was there and sat there with him, and he played it, and we talked about rock and roll and country. And so it did receive actually quite a bit of airplay.
I'm trying to think if who's the guy who was being parodied here?
Walter Brennan.
I'm trying to think if Walter Brennan was alive at this time.
He was.
He was alive.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know if he ever heard it?
I don't know. We should have sent him a copy.
Well, maybe you shouldn't have.
I doubt it that he heard it.
The third 45 on Metrobeat is the local dance band, the Underbeats. Sweetest Girl in the World, back with It's Gonna Rain Today. And that was that Universal Audio?
Universal Audio. David took them in to the studio. Let's see. It's Gonna Rain Today was an original.
By Enrico Rosenbaum.
Right. The late Enrico. And Sweetest Girl in the World.
Cover song, sure. Motown cover song.
Okay. Session down there. And by this time, there was some competition here with all the bands that Dave was working with. We had a lot of things going after, with Trashman, Underbeats, South 40, and Joker's Wild records at the same time, but the Underbeats were next up. This is, we were able to contribute to their discography list, which is very large.
Okay, and next up is South 40 with the Penny Song, backed with Good Lovin', released in June 1967. Anything come to mind?
Good Lovin', a cover.
That's Rascals.
Right, and Penny's song, I believe, Larry Wiegand and Bill Narmandon, I believe, are on the label as writers. I think they conspired together. I think maybe Bill started out and Larry helped him finish it or something like that. And they went in and recorded, did the session. Dave said by this time their name had been changed to South 40, and logically Metrobeat was the label to get the record.
This was a kind of a project that David Anthony had put together, hand-picked musicians to be part of South 40, correct?
Right. A couple bands that he had changed personnel around. I remember working on the creative aspect with another artist, no offense, Larry, John Thule at the Star Tribune, came up with the South 40 logo, which was a takeoff on the freeway sign, the national freeway sign all over the country, South 40. And they were off and running. This was their first 45.
So out of the Star Tribune building in downtown Minneapolis comes a lot of things related to the local music business.
We couldn't talk about it at the time, but we can now. What would you like to know? Now that we're all retired, Larry and I mean all.
All right, on to the next record, a band called Joker's Wild, June of 1967, All I See Is You. I Just Can't Explain It, obviously a David Anthony band.
Yeah, and I don't know much more about who they were. The trio. No, I'm pulling Denny Johnson's bass.
Five-piece.
Tony, did you ever see Joker's Wild as a five-piece band?
I did not. Nope.
Okay.
I thought it was three. Okay.
Well, they went from five to four to three.
Mm-hmm. Both originals by Lonnie Knight?
No.
No?
Lonnie wrote All I See Is You, and Bill Jordan wrote the flip side, I Just Can't Explain It.
Ah, okay.
So two originals on the Joker's Wild 45. Any success with that record?
Some airplay, distribution. I think by that point we were working with Heilitzer Brothers and probably some limited sales. 45s weren't on our end. Maybe the band was selling them on the bandstand. I'm not sure.
Okay, next is the Titans, To Covet the Turf, backed with Mountain of Love. What can you tell us about the Titans from September 67?
I'm going to defer to Tony on that. That was his production.
I was a friend of the band. I would sit in for George Johnson at Duff's downtown. They were the house band there playing six nights a week. George was in the military, and he'd have to go off on weekends once in a while, so I'd come in and play. And they did a lot of three-part harmony, and I really liked that. I got to know them really well. They wanted to go in the studio. Rick Colburn, the lead player, he was a terrific guitar player. In fact, I just saw him this last year. He was writing songs, and he and I started writing some songs, and so basically we just went into the studio and did those two songs. Covet the Turf was a really good song.
That's an original?
Yeah.
And Mountain of Love, is that the Johnny Rivers song?
It is.
Okay.
I believe it was a Dove recording session. Yeah. Mm-hmm. To Covet the Turf, we sent out to the DJs to get their attention little bags of turf, sod. By the time it got through the mail to the radio stations, I'm sure it didn't help our credibility at all. It made a big stink. But that's what we did. We tried to promote the records in some original way, unique way.
Yeah, that sounds very unique to me. Next up, we have a 45 on Peak. How did Peak relate to Metro Beat?
Should we call it a subsidiary
label?
We had four bands from Dave's agency. If the Trashmen were obviously off and running on their own by then, but Underbeat, South 40 Jokers, we were competing against ourselves, and then came the Titans as far as the local radio station. So the idea was to put it on a different label just to try and get attention.
Okay, and the Morticians come out in 67. I believe they were from Stillwater with I've Got Nowhere to Run, and the backside is just the instrumental track of the same song, correct?
Correct. I believe it's a Dove session.
Did they get any airplay with that song?
I believe so, probably over in Stillwater, I'm sure. Enough to, you know, it's still going. I just learned that the late Timothy D. Kerr is given producer credit on the record, which I wished I'd known that sooner. But this is one that caught the ear of Sundazed and one of their first releases on a compilation CD.
Was included. They included this song by the Morticians.
Right, I've Got Nowhere to Run. Yes, the original song by a deceased writer.
Okay, and next up was Kay Huntington with Christmas Stands for Love, backed with Once More from December 1967. This is on the Mill City label now.
One of Dave's booking agents that came in there part-time from Stillwater had a lady that he was working with and wanted to make a record for Christmas release. These are both self-penned things, more in the folk category. It was kind of, please take this and, you know, do what you can. I don't know that much came from it. She ended up with an album, or with a contract with a major label later on. She went on to the big time, at least for that one album. Mill City was just another way of getting pressure, if you want to call it, or the focus off of Metro Beat at this point.
Okay, and then the Cornerstones come back a year later to do a follow-up 45. When Will My Day Come? It's going to be that way. Did they have any success with that record?
Yes, they still had a huge following up in their territory, up in the Dakotas, north and south, would sell records up there. Again, airplay on the local stations up there. Nothing around here, but it did a job for them and helped their band success.
Next, Joker's Wild, back with another 45 on Peak, Because I'm Free, January 68, backed with Sunshine. Any information on that 45?
Tony Andreessen produced it.
I guess I produced it. I did. I remember going in. The thing I remember most about the Joker's Wild sessions were, no offense to any other people in there, but Lonnie Knight was just a monster guitar player. I mean, even back then, because we were doing some other sessions, you know, some blues sessions, and I was just amazed at what he could do. He was very innovative with the guitar back then.
And do we know which version of Joker's Wild this is as far as...
That was four-piece.
Four-piece.
Yeah, four-piece.
Okay, this is the four-piece band.
Greg Springer, Pete, Lonnie, and me.
And this is at Universal Audio, Tony?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
And I believe they're both written by Lonnie, Sunshine, and Because I'm Free.
Because I'm Free was written by Greg Springer.
Mm. Ah, Greg Springer.
Sunshine, Witch, and Copper Penny, the next three songs that we did in that session, we did four songs, were written by Lonnie.
Okay.
I'd like to get copies of those because I probably haven't heard them since, you know, we did them.
Any success with this 45 by Joker's Wild as far as airplay?
It got a little airplay on KDWB and WDGY, and that's probably the extent of it, I think. Mm-hmm. Maybe might have got some in Eau Claire, but that was about it. It didn't do much.
Mm-hmm. Now, at that time, there was a group of people who had a different kind of appearance. They had long, stringy hair and wore very strange clothes, and they were called hippies. Were Joker's Wild hippies?
Oh, I don't think you'd call them hippies. They were in. They were cool. That's what they were. I mean, they dressed in stage. They dressed for the stage. You know, they had outfits that they wanted to make themselves different than other groups. You know, everything about them really was different. They were, I think, the first power trio I recall. I mean, I don't remember anybody before them as a power trio. And they found out that they would really impress people with three guys putting out that kind of music. So they dressed up. I always thought you should look better than your audience, you know. If you're a musician and you're performing, you know, they wore clothes to enhance their performance.
And I've seen on the website a number of their different outfits, and you are absolutely correct.
I believe they were playing Labor Temple with the national so-called hippie groups.
When David Anthony began the Sunday night concerts in early 69.
Would it be 69? Okay, so this record right before then.
Okay, on to South 40. And this is a whole live album. And where was that recorded?
Someplace Else was the name of the club.
What city?
Of Robbinsdale, Minnesota, a former bowling alley that was a teen dance club. Universal Audio brought the truck up there and recorded their gig that night.
They actually had a truck with recording equipment in it?
Yep,
they did.
Yep, four track, I believe, yes. Threw some of the songs twice. We got it down, a lot of mixing later. It was a successful session.
How did that album sell?
Quite well. I believe over 1,000 into the second 1,000 pressing. At some point, it kind of peaked off, but locally, very well. That was distributed by Heilitzer Brothers and well-received.
As I recall, on that album, there are actually the sounds of screaming teenage girls.
We were invited them in. I think they paid their money and got to scream. Yes, we let them, you know, use that for all it was worth. It was live and came off that way.
It was a terrific album.
Nice package.
Okay, and then they had a 45 that came off that album later that year, July 68. I Want Sunshine, Going Someplace Else. I believe those are two original songs.
Yes.
Written by the band members.
Right, right.
Any success with that 45?
The intent was to get local airplay, as albums weren't popular for airplay at that point. Hard to queue up, if nothing else. So this 45, did its job in town here, and KDWB and DGY.
Next is the Church Keys. It's Not Unusual, back with Soul Sister, September 68. What's the story on the Church Keys?
A band that Dave booked. Their agent, I believe, was working for Dave at that time, and brought in a session. I think it was already recorded. I don't have details on it. It's Not Unusual was a cover.
The Tom Jones song?
Right. Soul Sister, I'm not sure.
Was this a local band, or were they from out of town?
No, from local.
And the next 45 is back on the Peak label with Joker's Wild, their third 45, Peace Man, June 69, backed with Tomorrow. How'd that record do for the label?
Very small pressing run. I don't know, maybe limited airplay. At this time, they were definitely working the circuit, the for lack of a better word, the hippie circuit, the labor temple, whatnot.
The underground circuit?
Underground, yes. Did.
That was our biggest single. That was number one in Rochester for weeks. And then when that one went down, they flipped it over, and Tomorrow went up to number one.
Wow.
So we had much airplay on that and rode the parade down there and all kinds of stuff. Yeah.
And I would assume this is the three-piece version of Joker's Wild.
Both written by Lonnie Knight? Tomorrow?
No, Tomorrow was written by Pete Huber, and Lonnie wrote Peace Man.
Okay, and was it produced by...
Tony Glover.
Yes, thank you for the name, yes.
And Tony Glover was who?
All-night disc jockey on KQ.
Mm-hmm. At that point, yes, all night.
Do you think that the Jokers were hippies? Real hippies? Do you?
Yes.
Real hippies?
I was trying to be funny.
I mean, but they worked. They really put in effort.
We worked, but everybody we hung around with, everything we did was.
Okay, next up for Metrobeat is the band called Midwest. The songs are Heaviness, back with Alibis from April 70. What's the story on Midwest?
That was Dan Holian. He went on to do a major album. I still have it. I thought it was a wonderful album, but he was really a talented guy. Writer, really good singer. He had a really commercial voice. His voice was very commercial. We did that song. Nothing happened with it, but it got some airplay, and it got them some work, but that was as far as it went.
Okay, next up is Lee Silverton, Laughing Lori, backed with Boy Am I Dumb, from December 1972. Mike, what's the story?
It's a country record, country-style songs, both self-penned by Lee Silverton, that's his stage name, wrote both of them. Good songwriter to get his name, keep his name out there for local bookings with his band, whose name I can't recall, but he wanted to be on the Peak label. He kept flipping around thinking label names. Well, I don't know if he flipping around, but changing label names. So we had him, so I didn't fight it. Following up after the Joker's Wild, what kind of confusion would that cause? He wasn't a hippie, though.
Okay, and the final 45 comes out on Peak, and that's Mark Allen, Carnival of Love, backed with Let It Go. What's the story on that from May 76?
He came to me with a tape from Nashville, a session that he had done down there with, I can't think of the producer right now, but he had a local following here, a band that played local gigs and wanted a record out. We put it out, Mike, and we settled on the Peak label. Because we were on a country roll, it's definitely a country-style song, both of them. Carnival of Love, that's a cover, I believe, and Let It Go might have been a self-penned or vice versa, I'm not sure. And that kind of brought us to the end of the 76, yeah.
How did Metrobeat work out on the financial end?
South 40 Live, the album, really helped Kitty, so to speak. It was a, the early on bands hadn't paid for their own sessions. I don't know that we could have pursued some of these. That was pretty much the thing, pay for your session and we'll get the records out as a promotion for the bands. And again, in conjunction with David Anthony.
So you had like a set fee for a certain number of hours and you'd press a certain number of records, a package deal?
Later on. Early on, the Underbeat South 40, no, it was pretty much they were on their own negotiating whatever with the studio. It became, yeah, kind of a package thing later on where we had things figured out as far as 500 records or 1,000. Nothing, no big money makers other than the South 40 Live album.
I don't remember real package deals, but the bands, we wanted to sell records, or they did, and you know, the bands would pay for it. Metrobeat would release the record and try to promote it. And I think you're right, though, there was some package deals later, but they were, it was basically covering our costs. That was it. I don't recall ever making any money from doing any of this.
No, my day job helped out a great deal. There was a lot of money shuffled there to cover. It was a hobby that got out of control, I guess, so to speak.
Well, it lasted a long time, but, starting with the Cornerstones in March 67 and going all the way up to Mark Allen in May 76. That's a long time period.
Yeah, in 76, my son was born in June of 76, so things were winding down, except we're spending more time in Nashville by then. Mm-hmm. So the shift away from the rock. And rock had changed. The hippies lost me. That three-piece group that played so loud that I couldn't, you know, I didn't follow that.
Yeah, the Jokers something.
But they were all nice guys. Still are. Really wonderful.
Let's get an update on what you guys are doing today. Larry, what have you been up to?
Wake up, Larry.
You mean music-wise? Very little.
You're not writing anymore? Playing?
Yeah, I'm still writing. I'm trying to convince a group that they should start recording again.
A certain group? Anybody we know?
Anybody you know?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is he sitting next to you?
I'm not gonna force you to divulge any secrets today, Larry.
You know, I've got one song. I went to down to Vegas in the winter of 2009. That's another story, you know, last great love affair of the 21st century. But I brought all my amplifiers and all of my tape recorders and stuff with, because I was still hoping to come up with another one for the Trashmen.
Another song?
Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
King of the Surf Part 2?
I have one song. I have one song that has been going around in my head since the winter of 2009.
Okay.
And Tony has never heard me say this, but I have one hit song.
Okay.
And when the copy of the Will Jones Surfing Terms column showed up, he said, send me that right away. I need that.
Hmm.
Now, I don't know if this is a surfing song he's thinking about or anything, but maybe it's about Will Jones. We don't know. We don't want to probe too deep.
I want to hear it, Larry.
Just keep going. Keep writing.
Tony, what are you up to these days?
I'm playing with the Trashmen occasionally. We're playing shows. We've been in Europe 13 times in the last 5 years, 5.5 years. We've played probably 100 shows in Europe in, I think, 13 or 14 different countries. We're playing, our next show actually is in Las Vegas. We're playing the Viva Las Vegas show. So, but that's coming to an end. I've been playing with a bluegrass band, the Platte Valley Boys, for about 15 years. We're doing about 50 shows a year, doing festivals in the summertime mostly. We all have our motor homes and we gather at the festivals and put them around like a wagon train, you know, and start a fire in the middle and do some jamming and have a lot of fun. Sometimes we spend 4 or 5 days there at a time, and thousands of people show up to hear bluegrass. You know, can you just, it's amazing because it's getting bigger. And we've got a new album that the Platte Valley Boys just did. It's been around for about 4 weeks. We sell it off the bandstand on our shows, and we've sold hundreds off the bluegrass shows in the last few weeks. And I'm doing a new album myself of songs that I've written, and the Platte Valley Boys are just starting another album.
Have you gone nonstop since Jim Thaxter and the Travelers?
No, I haven't. I was a financial planner for 45 years with a financial planning firm, North Star Resource Group. I retired a year and a half ago. It's been fun. I didn't play rock for probably 8 to 10 years, and then we'd get together, we being the Trashmen, once in a while. And we really weren't playing much until my wife talked to me about the fact that we should look at playing again, because Bobby V came back from Europe and was telling me that you guys are really big in Europe. And I said, really? And the more I told Barbie, the more she said she'd call the guys and see if they want to do some shows again. So I did. We went to Chicago and played a show, and it was sold out. And we went to Valencia, Spain, and the show was sold out. Imagine that, with the Trashmen, after all this time. Because we never thought we'd be playing at this point in our lives. But it's been quite a run the last 5 years. We've had a lot of fun with it. It's three of the original four guys are still together, because Steve passed away in 1989. My brother was playing drums for about 20 years when we would do shows once in a while. He's since retired, and our bass player's son, Rob Reed, is playing drums now.
It's a family affair.
Yeah.
Mike, what are you up to these days?
Retired. Working with Denny Johnson to get the history of local music put down on tape and pictures and whatever. Trying to get it capsulized with the help of Tom Campbell.
I understand you played a very important role in getting a lot of these Trashmen songs reissued over the past years. I guess starting, what, way back in the 1990s?
1990, the first with Sundays. Sundays, the reissue label out of Coxsackie, New York. A phone call one day asking what I had. They were looking through some old Billboard magazines or something that we had put Metrobeat in, a listing with a phone number and whatnot, and they went around calling around the country looking for groups and tapes and material that they could reissue. They were just starting up then. Luckily, one of the first bands that they reissued was the Trashmen in 1990, and a whole slew of packages since.
And that continues to this day with the recent release of a live 45.
Right.
By the Trashmen, recorded at the Whiskey Go-Go in St. Paul?
I believe in 67, something that I had done way back that they pulled out for Record Store Day in April of last year, or this year. So things keep coming. There's a Best of Trashmen double LP set in the works at some point to come out. And they're good at merchandising and marketing via the internet. They do a great job and never ceases to amaze. This is one facet of the business. Whoever would have thought back in 1966 or 7, back those days when we were doing these things, that would ever have a second life, especially the stuff that I did on the reel-to-reel recorder. When Tony said, yeah, we'd like to hear what we sound like at a gig. And lo and behold.
It's come along a long way, because with the Sundays, because we were, I think, the first or one of the first, the very first that they signed that were national acts. And through that time, they started making deals for us, and they've made so many deals with movies, Family Guy, and all of these deals were made by that group. They've been a wonderful group to work with. They've been wonderful to us, I mean, through this whole time, 22 years now. We're just, and we thank Mike Jan for hooking us up with that group.
It was just a chance phone call. I'm sure glad I answered the, took the call that day. Mr. Bob Irwin, that since moved down to Nashville, where he's running the company from there, but getting involved in playing. He's a guitar player also. It's been a great connection with the folks at Sundays. Tim Livingston back in Coxsackie, and Bob Irwin, Bob and his wife Mary.
And this time around, everyone's getting paid who deserves to get paid, correct?
Yes.
It's really nice to get the checks.
This is it's run the way the business should be run the way the book says it is run, but it really happens with people are paid for their work, for their songs. Publishers are paid. Songwriters are paid. Larry, his connections that got broke, Willong Music out of business, whatever happened to, but I said call them direct. They can send you checks directly for what's sold of the Trashmen. You get your money, get up front, you know, get paid, and that's what's happened.
Sounds like a good ending to me.
It's a happy ending, and thinking back, you know, when we first started down in the basement fooling around with these songs, whoever would have thought.
Mike, Tony, Larry, thank you for taking the time to stop by Sunrise Sound today and to share with us the story of your time with Metro Beat Records.
Thank you.
Thank you.